Good evening. It's Tuesday at 6 o'clock, and welcome to What Comes Next Live. And for our podcast listeners, welcome whenever you listen to it. This week's guest is my dear friend and cycling buddy, Sam Duong. As anybody who does cycle regularly knows, when you spend 2, 3, 4, 5 hours with somebody most weeks, you end up talking about a whole bunch of stuff. But I first met Sam up a mountain, thanks to mutual friend Carrie Bedingfield, on snowshoes. If I remember correctly, Sam was doing handstands on snowshoes. And then after that, we both love business. So Sam is a successful entrepreneur. I'm sure he can tell us a little bit about that in his introduction. And I have no idea what we're going to talk about today. But welcome, Sam.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to join you on one of your live stream and podcasts at last. And as you say, we have no idea what topics we'll touch upon. But certainly for your listeners, then my day job is running a food manufacturing business. And its specialist subject of choice is actually making Chinese pancakes. And to give you that idea of a scale of that, then each week we'll make about 3 million of the things. Markets it goes out to as far west as Las Vegas and far east as Australia. But the core stuff is still within the UK and mainland Europe, with all the different challenges around manufacturing, Brexit stuff, pandemic stuff, everything that's been going on the past 18 months. And as a manufacturing business, we've been through it and more. But certainly towards the end of the stages of pandemic in the UK, then over the summer, I've had a chance just to take a breather, take a pause, and just reflect on the personal journey as well as the business journey. And that's been a profound experience for me. To be fair, and there's two areas which hit my awareness, and the themes are one around being just enough, the thought and concept of just enough, and then the other area that I'm doing a deeper dive into is around the state of Tai Chi and what is before that, the state of Wu Ji or nothingness or beinglessness. And so those have been the two themes that have really occupy my attention, my passions. And so going back to the thought of just enough, and I pinged this thought to a Buddhist Zen teacher over in the States. Her name escapes me for the moment, but she wrote a running book around Zen and running. And I had a good read around that. And it did inspire this thought of just enough. And I said, well, given that thought, and if one were to actually use the concept of just enough, what a wonderful world it would actually be if it was just enough. And, you know, it's sometimes I get a bit too clever playing around with words, thinking, ooh, justice, and enough, if everybody had enough, and stuff around there. But thinking about that is, if we applied that thought to everything that we did, of just enough basics, food, shelter, energy, just enough to eat, doing just enough, not overly doing stuff or undercooking things. And I've played around with the thought of, you know, scarcity and abundance.
Yeah.
The different polarities there. But applying that just enough. You're not too scarce. You're not too abundant. It's just enough just for that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, move from moment to moment and it is just enough, mm-hmm. then it would actually be really cool. That could really just spread across the globe. So that one is occupying my brain cells, mm-hmm. and where that leads, I don't know yet. And I'm certainly trying to apply that to how I approach things. And taking learnings from previous, where there's lots of ups and downs in my work life and in my personal life, to actually just being there and applying just enough energy to things, and tracking across to my other passion at the moment is the Tai Chi state.
Explain first of all what is meant by the Tai Chi state.
So anybody who's has an interest in martial arts and whatnot, they would have come across Tai Chi Chuan, which is the Tai Chi martial arts. But its underpinnings is actually the concept of Tai Chi, which is more commonly known as yin and yang, positive and negative, dark and light. So that in essence is Tai Chi. But that Tai Chi state of having a positive and a negative actually comes from a state of nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as you have a yin yang Tai Chi state, then it wants to revert back to a state of nothingness. And from a martial point of view, to be able to apply that philosophy, that concept to practical applications is an interesting conundrum. But my interest lies beyond that. Through the summer I've been exploring that much more deeply and actually trying to make sense of it, and actually experience that, so that it becomes much more of a second nature. So to be able to apply the martial applications and move people without seeming to do so, or make any overt movements, that would be really, really cool. But that's the showmanship part of it. But the actual experience of the philosophy underpinning it, and to be able to make it happen, that's the state where I actually want to be in. But the philosophy of yin yangness and that Tai Chi state and moving to a Wu Ji state of nothingness, one particular aspect of that is, if you're in a state of nothingness and your awareness is such that you're able to encompass everything within and everything without.
Yeah.
As soon as something happens, that Tai Chi state, that yin yang state, something happens, mm-hmm. you're already there. And you become that thing that's actually happened, and you're able to influence that if you choose to.
Mm-hmm.
So to be able to do that and experience it would be really, really cool. And extending that further, if you are able to do that not only with yourself, but in an organization or with a team, then that would be supremely, supremely cool. And it's something that I'd like to work towards, and make happen. And whether it's actually possible or not, then it'd certainly be very fun trying. But the philosophical underpinnings of that, it is, deep.
Yeah.
And it allows for, lots of explorations there. And, you know, to be fair, there's been stuff written about it classically, and when you marry it up with the latest scientific thinking, then there is some very, very cool crossovers. And just an example in point, where in cosmological physics, where 95% of stuff out there we can't actually see, where is it? And you and I sitting here, then the stuff that we can see is actually interface with stuff that we can't see, and that just blows my mind. And so this state of nothingness, what lies between, and the energetic underpinnings of that, just really does blow my mind.
Cool. Let me pull on a couple of those threads. First thing that occurs to me is that in the West, we are so driven by achieving more since the Industrial Revolution 200 odd years ago. It's all about more. And, you know, that's kind of a big underpinnings of capitalism as well and things like that, right? So, I find it very difficult to understand these overlaying and interlinked concepts. So, you know, if you say to somebody, most people, you go, Buddhism is all about understanding that all life is suffering. But if we think of it, like a lot of the West is, for me to win, somebody else has to lose. Right? So suffering is a bad thing. If we start thinking of suffering as being the constant state of thinking about something, right, as opposed to having a clear and empty mind, when I was first introduced to meditation, I thought, well, I'm failing at it all the time because I can't go more than 10 seconds without thinking about something. You know, I put a lot of focus, passion into the idea of, I think the way I framed it was dissolution of the self in a sort of Buddhist way, which is very much like nothingness. And there's also this term ma, which is another way of looking at that as being the space in between.
Yes.
Which can apply to things as simple as music and pausing.
Yes.
And watching the Bond movie yesterday, one of the characters, I'm not plot spoiling, but one of the characters, a key to the character was the way the actor paused, and there was nothing happening when they paused, but there was everything happening when they paused in their speech patterns.
Yes.
So for the first thread to pull on is that it's quite difficult if you have not really been passionately curious about this to understand what the value is of just enough or nothing. And perhaps to look at it another way is a key existential crisis for many people in the developed world, in the Western part of the developed world, is that we're not enough and that we judge ourselves and others. And if I put that in an organizational space, if I try to pull it all together, what if we simply were super aware of what was, because we weren't thinking about having to do more, but we did just enough.
Yes.
And my example around this, and there's somebody I'm going to introduce you to as a food guy, is recently I was up at a very well established family business bakery, similar scale to your own elsewhere in London. And I was given the tour, and it was quite magical. And one of the most magical things about it, it was a relatively quiet time of day in a bakery that operates most hours of the day, was there were a few people in the bakery, most of whom had been there since they'd left school, and they'd been there 20, 30 years. Was linked to that, there was not a single, other than the occasional health and safety notice, there was not a single notice anywhere. No, nothing written down on any wall anywhere. And there were all kinds of different processes going on in this multi, you know, multi-product bakery. And everybody was just completely in flow. Yes. And so there were, you know, people in their 50s, even 60s working away. And they were doing, it was just ease.
Yes.
Everything was just working. And meanwhile, the guy running it, who's one of the family members who owns the bakery, was just going, oh, this is happening here, this is happening here. And large volumes of product being in different stages of production. And it just seemed to be, nobody was forcing anything. It was all in flow.
Yes.
So in a way, it was what you're talking about. And I guess if I then finish by putting it into perspective of, you started off by talking about the different challenge you use the business has had. And it's, I mean, you don't need to go into any more detail, but people can imagine if you've got a multi-million dollar business that exports and imports, and is dependent upon staff, often from Eastern Europe, then you have, that's so a lot of Brexit issues, then you throw COVID into the mix, and government support and red tape and paperwork, many, many challenges. So keeping your own personal balance as a leader is important. But also, you know, if you go into, it'd be amazing just being in a factory or bakery. And if something goes wrong, the moment it goes wrong, it, people just click into action because they know exactly what to do. Fascinating.
And it tends to be people on the ground know exactly what's going on because they are so well versed in actually, their senses are well versed in listening out for what's not normal. That doesn't sound normal. Something's not quite right there. And the really switched on ones will be able to just instantly know, ah, it's that which is just needs a tweak, or if there's a catastrophic failure, then they know straight away something's happened. So I tend to find that if I allow that to happen in my own business, allow people to do what they're best at and actually just get the hell out of the way, then it seems to be much calmer and it flows with ease. And then my job becomes more just aligning stuff through the organization to allow that ease to work its way through. And so that whole idea around alignment and giving direction and allowing the energy to flow through a business, then it allows the business to be more at ease and the people within the business to be more at ease, and they do what they do best without too much aggro. And given that it's an established business now, and despite all the different challenges of bringing newer people on board, old hands on there will have a certain way of looking at things, doing things, and they'll introduce how they do things to new people, and their way of doing it. But for me, leading a business like that, and scanning the horizon and trying to put things in place so that we're ready for the different challenges that comes along, stuff that we can actually see and stuff that we can't. and keeping it agile enough to respond. And that's part of my job. But if I bring it back to the awareness piece and bringing awareness to myself, bringing awareness to the business, then if that awareness is a super awareness, let's say, as soon as some stuff happens, you're already on it. You're already there.
Yeah.
And you don't have to fight hard to do something about it because you're there instantly. As soon as something happens, you are there. And then whatever that thing actually happens, can't tell that you're actually there. And that's the cool bit. It can't tell that you're there to be able to do something about it if you choose to, or if it's necessary. And if it's not necessary to do something about it and it's going in the right direction, then you allow it to happen. But that state of instant awareness and being there without allowing the event to dictate what happens, that's the state that I'm working towards. And that is taking the philosophy from Tai Chi. And in some of the classics written about it, stuff around, let's say if you're working with an opponent and they're trying to do something, you're there already. As soon as they try to do something, you're there. But yet they can't tell that you're there. And that's just so cool. So to apply that personally and to apply that to a business.
I love business and so do you. So I'm applying it to business a bit. I was just on a call with a client who's going through the somewhat holistic and magical process of establishing their intent and their values as an organization. And it is quite a magical process. There's a process, and yet it only really works if you allow things to flow.
Yes.
And one of the parts of this is they're going, what makes them different is that they said, well, we always exceed expectations. And I went, okay, that's potentially a bit of a problem because, you're chasing something which can be problematic commercially down the line. Sounds great on the surface, but if you're always exceeding expectations, then their expectations increase and it becomes cascading. But they said, well, actually, it's more that we accurately set expectations for them.
Yes.
So they might come in and say to us, hey, we want you to do this. And we go, okay, but let's just deeply listen to you and let's understand what you need. And actually, we feel that what you're going to need is what you're saying and this, take away this, add this.
Yes.
And then it kind of got to a point where one of them said something like, it's not that we provide solutions rather than look at problems. We provide solutions to problems they don't know they're going to have yet. And that feels like magic to them.
Yes.
And so what we started to explore from a business standpoint is how do they do that? And we really went up a number of layers. They started talking process. I went, okay.
Yeah.
So it's actually that state in which you're ready to receive signals that others won't.
Yep.
And that's the magic in what you do. And so what do you need to do in order to be ready to receive those signals in order to be able to really understand it? And a lot of it's like, a lot of it's in deep listening to both the client and the environment. So yeah, so that I can really see that investing in the slight conundrum of investing in being in a nothing state can take an enormous amount of preparation and focus so that you can be there to respond instantaneously.
Yes. The thing there is you can't focus on the thing happening. As soon as you focus on the thing happening, your energies are actually led there. It's held there by that thing. You have to keep outside of that and affect it beyond that thing that's actually happening there. And the other part of it is to be able to achieve this state, you have to step outside of your mind. So you can't just rely on the intellect. You can't rely on your mental processes to shed light on it, because it can't. It's held within its goldfish bowl. You have to be outside of it.
You're an accomplished martial artist, so you can give examples of that. Mine immediately fly back nearly 29 years to playing in a pretty important squash match for the Cayman Islands, which was the decider of a tournament. And I was in an incredibly relaxed state going into the match. I knew I was going to win. And it didn't feel like conscious ego or confidence. I just kind of had this feeling. And not only did I have no idea what the score was until somebody said match point, and there were hundreds of people watching it. I'm not looking at any of them. I'm just playing. But imagine when you play squash, you have to run, you know, when somebody hits something, you have to react. Right. And I can't tell you, I was told afterwards that people couldn't believe how many times I was there the second the person hit the ball. And how did I know they were going to hit it there? Yes. I'm going, I have no idea. I was just in flow.
Yes.
So that was, I didn't consciously get to that point. I mean, it was many, many years ago. But I vividly remember it as being a complete flow state. I had no idea what the score was. I just played each game at a time, went on and played, and it just I felt like I wasn't even there. But people commented, how did you know where they were going to play? If I'd thought about it, I wouldn't have known.
But I suspect on an energetic level, then you merge with the opponent. So you knew exactly what they were going to play, and you knew exactly where you needed to be at any moment in time. And so reaching that state where you're at one with your opponent and you're able to control yourself to be at the right place at the right time, then it's a skill. And it's certainly very much my belief that it's a skill that can be learnt. It can be trained to be improved upon. And so the interest is to be able to teach that as a skill.
Well, for me, as somebody with a decade or more coaching experience, I mean, I have much like yourself, one of our commonalities is we're very curious about the world and how it works. And we kind of keep diving further and deeper down into things. And if we think of coaching as a skill that can be taught, I'm practicing it much as you practice yoga or practice martial arts. I'm not a master, but I have established a certain degree of mastery.
Yes.
But listening, why am I interested in nothingness? Why am I interested in flow? Because all the best questions come when your mind is completely clear.
Yes.
You're not actually asking a question because it seems like the right question to ask, or I've got a list, or a response pops into my mind. It comes when you have absolutely no idea what to ask next, and it suddenly flows forward. Yes. And you can teach that skill. So I believe you can. It's interesting. You can teach it in application different ways. Very cool. And these are the kind of things we talk about when we're on our bike.
It is.
In amongst really just enough quests such as bacon rolls and black coffee.
Yes. If you apply just enough energy to get up that hill, and just enough momentum to keep up with your partner going down the hill at the same time.
I'm not sure I will have just enough energy to keep up with you, given your 30 kilometers of me up a hill. And if you pedal half fast enough and tuck in behind me, you can keep up with my weight going down the hill.
Yeah. But it's just enough goes both ways as well.
Yeah.
So with
that, an honoring time for yourself and for our later listeners, I think that's been a fascinating conversation on just enough and what was the term?
Tai Chi and Wu Qi.
Wu Qi. Okay. Great. So what last words might you have for our listeners?
Be still and practice listening with all your being.
Wise words, Sam. Many thanks.
Thanks, Tom.